Hey everyone, it's the Lady J. You're listening to my podcast, I Never Told You What I Do For a Living. If you're a regular listener of the show, you'll know there was no episode last week. And that's because I needed to take a little break. I hope everyone out there who is listening right now is taking a little break when they need one too. There's a lot of weird stuff going on out there in the world. And sometimes the best thing that we can do for ourselves is to just take a deep breath and a little bit of a pause. Hopefully, whatever it is that you're doing to pass the time right now, whether you're working from home or you're doing some freelance projects, you're taking care of your family, or you're just taking care of yourself, I really appreciate that you're taking some time to listen to this episode of the podcast. This was a great conversation with Chloe, who I had never spoken to before, but who took me further along this journey of talking about esports and sports broadcasting, as well as graphic design. Chloe was extremely vulnerable with me during this conversation, and I cannot thank her enough for doing that. It's not easy to be honest with someone you don't know very well. And so Chloe took a leap of faith with me by talking about all the things that she's been going through lately with her health. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode, and make sure that you reach out via Twitter, Instagram, or whatever way you like to communicate so we can talk even more about our work and our way that we identify with work, our education, and our careers. I'm here to talk about anything that you want to, but we'll do all that stuff at the end. In the meantime, this is episode 25 of I Never Told You What I Do For a Living with Chloe, the Pathfinder. I'm joined by Chloe. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm great. This is the end of my working week, just about. I have to get through Friday and then I'm done for the weekend. And I'm very excited about that.
Oh, I'm very jealous. Since like I've just changed to being a freelancer, like literally for the last month, I've been working weekends as well. So I don't have any break yet.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But I'm looking forward to like next Monday, I think is like the next break I'm going to have.
Excellent. Excellent. So Chloe, I always begin the podcast by asking the same question, which is what is your earliest childhood memory of what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, this is a really tough question for me. And it's mainly because I don't know. And I think, honestly, from even my earliest memory, I don't think I've ever actually had an ambition. And I'm still even trying to work that out now. It's very strange. Like, I remember my siblings always had like a very clear vision of what they wanted to be. And they've achieved that now. And for me, I've always just wanted to make people happy. And that's all I've ever wanted. So I feel like that's kind of my end goal, and the stuff that I've done from when I was kind of first starting working, I guess I just wanted to end up in a position that I could be entertaining, I guess.
Did you feel a lot of pressure from the adults in your life when you were growing up to choose something?
Yeah, I did. So on my dad's side, my grandfather was a cinematographer in Tehran. So he made like a load of movies, and he worked with the king of Iran at the time. And from my dad's side, there was just a lot of this pressure of like, you got to be creative, because there's a lot of creative people in our family. So I always felt like instead of, having a kind of clear vision for myself, it was kind of driven from my dad, I guess.
And did you feel like there was support for you to experiment with different things, or was it just kind of like, oh my God, Chloe, pick something already?
There was this very clear understanding from my dad that like he didn't want me to do anything to do with music. That was always very clear, which I found very funny because he loved music growing up. Like he could play pretty much every instrument and kind of wanted me to play them all. But it was very like, don't get a career in music. You need to do something that's going to pay your bills. So he kind of pushed me to go down like graphic design and art and illustration, which is kind of what I ended up going through when it went to when I went to school and college and uni. Like I ended up getting a degree in graphic design and advertising because I at the time that's what I felt like was gonna please my dad.
When before you went on to university, did you feel like you had support from any of your educators?
I kind of weirdly in like the environment I grew up with in school, it kind of felt like everyone was very do what makes you happy, do what you feel like is right for you. And I've never felt like I knew exactly what to do, and because of that guidance from my dad, I always felt like, oh, maybe art is the right thing for me. Like I skill wise I always seemed to be strong in art and design and maybe video. And that's why I think I naturally drifted towards like an interest in it in school, but primarily because I thought it would make my dad proud.
And did you feel that university was like, that was a given? You were definitely going to go to university.
Yeah, I think like it wasn't exactly expected, but it was kind of like I kind of wanted to prove my family wrong in that no one had gone to university in my family. So I felt like I had to do it just for myself, because I wanted to be proud of me for doing it. And it was kind of that thing that if you went to university, everybody kind of thought that you were intelligent. And I always put myself down. People that know me always like say that I do it too much. And when I was growing up, it was a lot worse back then. So I felt like if I went to university, I could be the intelligent one for once.
That's such an interesting perspective on the way that you viewed university, because I don't think that's something that anyone else has ever mentioned, whether they're someone who went, because I've had people on the podcast before who've gone and who haven't gone, and nobody's ever put it quite that way. But yeah, that's kind of, there's like a little thing when you're thinking at that age about going to university. It's like, well, smart people go to university. So yeah. If I want to be a smart person, I'd better go and do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, like controversially, I, you know, at that point I was watching a load of like YouTube content, and there was a load of people that had obviously dropped out of like even school or college and not gone to university. But for some reason, I guess maybe it might have been from my family side of things, but it just felt like if I wanted to achieve something, I had to go to university, because it would prove something on my CV. It would be like, you know, proving that I'd turn up on a daily basis to something, to an employer, that I could be reliable and that I would get to an end result. And like I said, yeah, proof that kind of that I was intelligent. And I mean, I feel like that didn't work in my favor, but.
So what did you end up studying at university?
So I got a first class honors degree in graphic design and advertising, specializing in motion, I think it was. I kind of forget now. It was like 2012.
Were you encouraged when you were at university to try other types of art, or was it like a very highly specialized and siloed program?
It was very specialized in that they really wanted us to go down like typography, and they wanted us to kind of fall in love with poster design and like layout design and stuff like, if we were going straight into a job in the design industry, I would have been able to fall into something like brochures or flyers, for example. But for me, I never found that interesting, and I kind of went against my tutors, I think. And I really liked video at that point, because I'd been watching so much YouTube and kind of that new generation of entertainment, I guess, at that point. I found it really interesting to play around with like moving shapes and moving text and doing motion videos. And I kind of tried to pass it off as design and convinced my tutors to kind of give me credit for doing that. And essentially everyone hated me at uni because they'd see me watching YouTube videos and making videos and still ending up with a good like degree at the end of it when they'd all been studying typography.
So you were clearly taking matters into your own hands. Did you do any internships or anything like that when you were at university?
No, I literally spent, so from the time that I was in college through to university, I was cleaning at a school at the same time as my job. And I was cleaning from like 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. And then I'd run, literally run for about half an hour to get to uni on time. Do my university like day would normally be until like the afternoon. And then I'd run from there to like game the retail store to do like a retail shift up until closing the shop, drive home, do my coursework, try and do a YouTube video, and then I'd be asleep at about midnight and then up at 2 a.m. to drive back to my job. Like I kept myself busy.
I mean, that's important though, because clearly that is a very serious work ethic, but also I think there's a lot of people don't necessarily understand that it is a privilege to attend a higher education without working simultaneously. Yes. And it is a serious undertaking to be working and trying to attend school at the same time.
Yeah. And like for me, like I came from a family that like we have no money, and like my grandparents had gone through bankruptcy. My parents had gone through bankruptcy as well, and also like divorce and everything at the same time whilst I was getting into uni. And it was like, I kind of realized at that stage, like, I didn't have a credit card. I didn't want to take out a loan or get a student loan. So I tried to pay for the first year myself. And then kind of after that, I mean, I realized at that point that I did actually have no money and I had to take a loan. But I wanted to take that job at the same time, or two jobs at that point, to try and fund everything the best that I could myself, because I never wanted my family to feel like they had to.
I hope you don't mind me asking questions about this part, just because it's not, it is a part of the conversation that is often in the periphery of these podcast interviews, but people don't always want to talk about it, which if you don't, I totally understand. Do you feel like your parents were honest with you about financial things just in general? Like, were you aware at that time of what was happening, like you mentioned, with your parents and your grandparents going through bankruptcy? And that must impact how you live your life as an adult if you've seen that previously as a child.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it, in all honesty, it was scary growing up, because it was like at that point, like I was 10 years old, and you know, my grandparents had like lost their house probably a lot earlier than that, and they'd come to live with us. And then like a few years after that was when like my mum and dad themselves went bankrupt. And I remember when I was 10 years old, like there was a repo man that came to the door, and my dad was like, you know, screaming at me and like not to let anyone in, and hiding our stuff in the loft and stuff. Like it was a crazy time. And now, like having been through that and growing up as an adult, I'm like, I still don't have a credit card. I still don't have anything, like, fingers crossed, you know, never will have any like debt to my name, because I'm terrified of that now. And it has kind of pushed me, I guess, in the background to always do the best that I can always do, because I never want to, you know, fail, I guess.
So you graduated with your amazing degree, and what did you decide to do next?
I feel like there's a lot of pressure on people to immediately jump into maybe the job that they wanted from uni, or like if say I was, you know, I was studying graphic design, so logically everyone I knew wanted me to go and do a graphic design job. And I felt like that was not what I wanted. Like, you know, as I mentioned, my dad wanted me to get into graphic design. I didn't really have that much of an interest in it, but I could do it. And because I'd been watching a load of YouTube whilst I was at uni, I felt like I wanted to be part of that. And through just a hobby of like making videos whilst I was still working like my two jobs at the time, I approached a multi-channel network. There was a big one at the time that was looking for a host and producer. And I felt like I could do it because it was very hands-on. It was stuff like creating thumbnails, filming B-roll, interviewing guests. And, you know, I'd been messing around with YouTube for the last few years. And I think, like, my application, I had to send a video. And in the video, I basically said, I'm not a man, but I do have the balls. Since, like, at the time, like, there was only really Naomi Kyle on IGN. And, like, this was around, like, 2011, 2012. And I just felt like there was not a lot of girls at the face of things. So I think, like, that job was kind of the start of everything for me.
So when was that a full-time position?
It was kind of a part-time position. So I was still doing one of my jobs at the same time. But it involved kind of, you know, doing a lot of Skype interviews and then traveling to events, which is actually where I first got connected to the events industry. And I met a lot of people via that job. And it was a great thing to work for, but I realized as well that the longer that I stayed there, it was a very bad company to work for at the time. Like, I can say it now because the company's actually been changed a lot since then, but the UK part of the office got shut down only about 5 months after I had the job. But luckily, because I'd worked with them and I'd gone to all of these different gaming events, I'd met all these people that kind of got me connected into this niche little cute event that was called Geek that was in Kent. I don't think it runs anymore, but it was kind of my first step in that they needed a designer, but they also wanted someone that was open to getting into like project management and social media and kind of understanding the way that events worked. And that kind of interested me, especially because it was like orientated around gaming. I love gaming. That was pretty much my main interest growing up. and weirdly, that company, the parent company of Geek, was actually like a museum design company. They specialize in like doing exhibitions for Singapore Science Center and like Hong Kong Space Museum, I think it was. So I ended up doing a lot of design work for them, but then organizing their event on the side, if that makes sense.
Did you know anything about gaming events before the first time that you went to one?
Not at all. I honestly, when I started working for the MCN, it was one of the reasons that I wanted to go and speak to them, because on the job application they'd put up saying like, we're going to this gaming event that's called Insomnia. And Insomnia at that point, it looked like just, I don't know, I guess like what my dream event would look like. Like a load of gamers just sat in a hall, you just play games the entire 4 days that you're there and that's it. And I just felt like that was amazing. And like, I didn't have that many friends that were gamers. So I felt like I just wanted to go to these events just to get to know people, get to know the communities, and also get to see, you know, new games and talk to developers, because that was so awesome. And yeah, like the MCN took me to Insomnia. My first Insomnia was I-49, and meeting so many people. Like I said, like that's how I got to know Geek, but it's how I got to know so many people within the games industry, were from the multiple times I then got to go to these events.
So at the time, you were a designer who was trying new things. You were getting into a part of the gaming industry that you didn't even really know about at the time. So where did you go next? How did you follow that path?
So during this moment of my life, I got to 22 years old, and I realized that I was still living with my grandparents, and because that as well, like I lived with my grandparents after my mom and dad got divorced, and I was doing that to save money instead of living like on campus at uni. So I realized that it was probably the right time for me to move out and live away from my family for the first time. So the move meant that I left my job, because I'd met someone at that point that we were moving to Bristol, And like, he was a good friend of mine as well. Luckily, through working with Geek and the MCN, I'd met Insomnia, and they started talking to me, like begging me to be their graphic designer because they really needed help. And that was just my dream, because of I fell in love with the event, and they'd come to me saying, hey, you're a graphic designer. Yeah, we'd really like you to work with us. And even though I'd moved to Bristol and they were based in Southampton, they were open to the idea of making it a remotely working job, which was perfect for me at the time, you know, fresh from moving out and working remotely, but still on a contract as well. So I was still full-time employed with them. But yeah, I got everything kind of in the palm of my hand. But I mean, very, very quickly, it became aware that I could not do that job remotely. Like getting sent design files that were gigabytes huge that I couldn't even transfer. And yeah, it became a bit of a mess. And like their office was like a 2.5 to 3 hour like drive away. So I couldn't commute. I'd sold my car to move. So I ended up relocating to their office. And yeah, it kind of, my steps into the gaming industry and design started there.
Had you ever considered working in a remote position before? Because I feel like remote work is becoming much more of a thing that some people are really after when they're looking for work. I'm just curious whether at the time you were like, yeah, remote is what I really want to do, or it just sort of fell in your lap and you were like, yeah, let's give this a try.
At that time, I mean, it was 2014 at that time, and honestly, it was terrifying. I didn't like the idea of remote, and I think that was purely because it was design-based. I think if it was anything else, like Geek had actually offered to continue like working with me remotely to do the project management, and I felt like that was more doable. But unfortunately, the design work took a lot more time. So I naturally just progressed to Insomnia. But I felt like doing design work on my own anyway, I wanted to collaborate with more people next to me. And it got really hard, I guess, at that point. But it was terrifying to think that it was remote. I was just kind of lucky that it ended up not being. Now, fast forward to 2020, I love the idea of remote working. Internet is a lot more accessible now than it was then, at least here anyway.
But, and there's a lot more like solutions online for large file sharing and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even at that point, like they weren't really using stuff like Google Drive. It was all relying on things like WeTransfer or Dropbox. And at that point, it wasn't that great for sharing files. So it wasn't great.
So after you moved to Southampton, is that right?
Yes.
So you were working for Insomnia as a full-time designer?
Yes. Yeah, I was.
And how was that transition to being in their office?
So honestly, this was probably the second time ever in my life that I experienced burnout. Like it was incredible people, an incredible environment, but I put a lot of pressure on myself to be the best that I could be. I actually saw someone tweet about this recently. I think Josh Ling and Jesse Rain. I think you know Jesse anyway. But they were talking about this, something about like if you're the only person that does like a particular job, it can be incredibly isolating. Like colleagues might not understand, or no mentors, no growth. And I completely get that and relate to that, especially in that job. I was the only graphic designer that was working in the company. My boss, Shed, he was there, but he'd kind of progressed. Me coming in was his progression to kind of step out of design and into broadcast. And I was left to kind of hold up graphic design within the business. And I felt like, I mean, he took it very hard. He put like a lot of guilt to himself that I was not dealing with it in the right way. Like I was working from like 8 a.m. to 3 a.m. to make sure that everything was right. Because it was at that point, it was four events a year plus, well, four insomnia events a year plus like not sometimes like 5 to 8 external events that weren't ours. And I was alone doing everything. And it was just, I wanted to make sure that there was everything done to perfection. And my mental health took a massive dip during that period. There was a lot of stuff going on outside of work as well, but I stressed myself out to the point where I did eventually snap.
But you said that the person who was your supervisor took some kind of responsibility for it after the fact. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. So he encouraged me to speak out. And honestly, speaking out was probably one of the best decisions that I ever made. I also found my voice a lot more after that. Like notably, like my boss and his boss, Andy, were, and they still are very good mates of mine. But from that point, I found my career kind of elevating and the support growing. Like 3 years from there, I went from graphic designer to the graphic design project manager that I had people working under me, that finally, like, I had the support after about a year of drowning, I guess. But then, you know, they saw that I had passion for digital content and the new generation of entertainment, like I said before. So they shifted my role into digital content and graphics. And then eventually Shed went to leave the company and I became the boss of the content and creative team. And that was crazy. I got, you know, at that point there was, I think, 6 people working under me, but that wasn't just graphic design anymore. That was graphic design, videos, content for a gaming festival that hosted over 70,000 people over a weekend. It was mental. and I, you know, I was very, very nicely, I was nominated and selected for MCV's 30 Under 30 in 2017 because of colleagues of mine were kind of, you know, nominating and supporting me. Like, they were lovely people. Like, it was such an incredible job, honestly. But it just, there was a lot of like burning the candle at both ends.
Do you think there is any solution for that?
For me personally, there wasn't really a solution, but more of a realization. And for me, it was my partner who actually made me realize what I was doing. If I'd never met her, I would have just run myself into the ground, I think. I'd already, you know, snapped once before with my mental health problems. But when I met my partner, Charlie, she kind of changed my perspective on everything. It kind of, I realized the value of myself, and the value of my time and the value of, you know, understanding what I was doing to myself. More than what my job was worth.
Do you find that in your work environment or in your past work environment, you have struggled to establish boundaries?
Yeah, I will be completely honest that I am a workaholic, if you hadn't noticed. So it was very hard. Like, I couldn't let stuff go. And especially when I became a manager, it was hard as well. Like, because I had that perception of like always wanting to be perfect and making everything the best I could make it, I then wanted to help my employees be the best that they could be. But I never wanted them to feel the pressure that I felt. I always wanted to kind of not do it for them or handhold them, but like, make sure that they left on time early, but they got their stuff done and they felt like they'd accomplished everything, because it was like, here's a pat on the back, make sure you go get a drink and look after yourself, and I'm going to stay here and make sure that I get a to-do list ready for tomorrow done.
You were trying to shield them from what you had already been through. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you, so you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that you are freelance now, which sounds very different than being the boss. I mean, it's kind of like being the boss, but it's not quite the same thing. So what happened once you became the boss?
Well, honestly, like, meeting my partner, like, she changed everything. And it made me kind of realize that I couldn't do that job anymore. I'd fallen out of love with it, which is why everything became so hard. And, you know, there was a growing amount of pressure with the parent company and targets and choices that I didn't have the passion or determination to change anymore. And it was just time to move on. And I knew that there was someone else that could do the job a lot better with a fresh, like, eyesight. And honestly, my best friend Jessie was the one that took on and turned it into something amazing, and obviously the rest of the crew that worked tirelessly on that show. But Charlie kind of made me realize that I could take on new jobs on my own. I started myself as freelance at that point. I didn't go full-time immediately, but I started taking on jobs that I could only have dreamed of doing. My first ever freelance job, I was the creative consultant on Minecon 2018. So their global broadcast that they do annually. I just sent a message, honestly. I've come to notice that a lot of things have happened to me just because I've spoken up. But I just sent a message and was like, hi, I've done graphic design for Minecon for a few years, and I've noticed that there's a few things that I personally would change about this. Could I maybe help you? And weirdly, they said yes. And I got to work with them. And I mean, that being a daunting task in itself, like, working on Minecon and being this one kid that was like 25 years old and just wanting to take a stab at working on a live broadcast, that was unheard of for me.
What was that experience like? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. At that point, I think I kind of realized that I wanted my career to move towards broadcast. I loved like the technical side of it, working out like feed solutions and graphic solutions. And I loved working on the scripts. I loved working on, I call it a stage Bible, but I think it's actually called something else in the industry. this is the problem with like not actually being taught this stuff. but I loved just the environment of, you know, I worked with a variation of like people from Sweden, people in Seattle, some people from London, and just kind of like understanding that world instead of the world that I'd come from, which was purely events based and making people happy on the weekend that they'd come and watch a stage show or, you know, walk around and interact with something. I was then helping produce a show that was going to millions of people around the world that we had to do within 1 hour. It was kind of that kind of dramatic shift. And I love a challenge. And I saw that as the next target, I guess.
It kind of sounds like you really like to rise to the challenge, because each thing that you've done has definitely been pushing you outside of your comfort zone, but you find a way to conquer it. It's not always easy and it's not always pleasant, but I mean, you've surrounded yourself with some pretty wonderful people, because you've spent a lot of this time talking about the influence of other people, encouraging you to speak up for yourself and take yourself seriously and consider the choices that you've made and what choices you're going to make next.
I mean, it's a very bad outlook to have, but I've always thought that other people know me better than I know myself, which is the backwards way of that saying. But I have such a supportive environment, like be it my partner, be it my family, now or be it my friends, everyone has always been there for me, whether to kind of tell me that I'm doing something wrong, which, you know, I welcome their criticism because I wouldn't maybe have seen it myself, and also to kind of, you know, tell me if I'm doing something the right way. By no means do I rely on it, I guess, but it's just I've never been able to do it on my own because then it gets really lonely, I guess, especially as a creative. I feel like it is quite key to kind of surround yourself with people that are very down to earth and grounded and can kind of keep you on track. And especially, like, saying that as a full-time freelancer now, it's so important to have these people around me, because you miss that opportunity of, like, I've done, say, this piece of design work, and then if I am the only person that I've looked at that piece of design work, how do I know whether it's good or not? How do I value that? But if I show it to people and kind of bounce ideas, then I can kind of gauge it at that point.
I personally think that it's just not possible to be objective when the thing you're trying to have an opinion about is you, whether it's your work or your skill set or your talents or what you're bringing to the table, your ideas, you're always going to be downgrading yourself for some bizarre reason. We just always think that we're not up to snuff, whereas the people around us do actually have an objective vision of us. They probably have the same problem when it comes to deciding what's going on in their own lives. But when it comes to looking at other people, especially people who care about you and want you to be successful, those are great people to say, like, am I possibly burning myself out very badly right now? Yeah. For them to be like, yes, I'm so glad you noticed. You need to calm down quickly. Yeah. Let's take some deep breaths and talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. I've had those conversations a lot.
I would be very concerned for anyone who has never had one of those conversations, yeah, from whichever side of the table you might be sitting on. But we've definitely all, yeah, been there, whether it's grabbing someone by the shoulders and being like, you must chill, or somebody grabbing us by the shoulders and telling us that we must chill.
Yeah.
So how did you transition into becoming freelance as your primary job?
So kind of when I'd done that first job, obviously in the background, I'd kind of jumped to a couple of game studios in the time being. And I went to one that was super supportive and great. But unfortunately, just as I joined that job, my partner Charlie had got some news with an upcoming surgery that I was kind of worried for her actual health. And I wanted to take some time for us, really, and make sure that she was okay and make sure that the recovery was going to be okay. And the job at that point, because I just started, I just felt like it was really unfair if I was to just start a job and then immediately leave, like on holiday. So I just kind of gave it my notice and was like, look, find someone that's going to be good for this while I take some time for Charlie. And then, you know, luckily her operation went well. Well, there were some complications, bless her, but she's well now.
That's good.
Which is good. So I took a few months where I was just doing my part-time freelance while I was making sure that she was okay. And then I got approached by my old boss from Insomnia, who had now moved on to another gaming company, who then approached me and said, hey, I've noticed that you've got this passion for broadcast now. I'd really like if you came to work for me again and I can make your job now purely about broadcast. And that was an incredible thing for me. And I jumped at the opportunity. Unfortunately, the job was about 2.5 hours away from where I live, because at this point, me and Charlie had started living together and everything was going great. And I didn't want to relocate. And obviously, stuff was still going well with my freelancing. So it was kind of like, I don't really want to commit that much. But he was very understanding. And I had like a flexi time start. He just really wanted me to kind of get into broadcast and fall in love with it like he did. So I did that, and I worked there for a good few months. And then, unfortunately, last year, I had a back injury, and kind of really weirdly, and it's always strange talking about this, but I didn't do anything. Like, there was no accident. I was driving home one day, and then I felt this weird pop in my back. And the next day I couldn't move, and I had to go to a hospital and get a scan. And they found that I had degenerative disc disease. I had two spinal fractures. I had a mild spinal bulge. And
And you had just been walking around like that and had no idea.
Yeah, like it. Well, they think that the jolt had kind of been what had compressed the nerve and it kind of brought everything to light. Because they said to me, like, the degenerative disc disease would have come on like a lot later in my life, but because of whatever had like triggered this, everything had just risen like way above. Like they even said to me, there at one point, one of the consultants said to me, oh, don't worry, these fractures are very common in gymnasts. I was like, I'm not a gymnast. I get a computer every day. What do you think I am? But yeah, and unfortunately, because of this, like, I spent months and months on medications, getting scans, I had lumbar injections, like steroid injections, to kind of see if I could stop the pain. I started to lose feeling in my legs, couldn't walk properly. And then I met this one surgeon that was kind of specializing in like chronic pain. And he was just kind of like, look, I'm going to make a last kind of attempt before like ultimately surgery. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really want to go through surgery because, stupidly, the only thing on my mind was I want to go back to work, which is such an unhealthy thing to have. People, please don't think like that. But I just wanted to go back to work. So I couldn't bear the idea of going through surgery and taking more time out. At this point, I'd already been off work for maybe 6 to 7 months, which for someone who's been working every day since the age of like 14, 15, I was going crazy. And he essentially put 7 steroid injections into my spine. I think like 4 of which were like facet joint injections, stuff that basically like anesthetic that just went into my joints to kind of calm down nerves and just so I couldn't feel anything. And the idea being that I then did 1 month of intense hydrotherapy and physiotherapy to kind of kickstart my body again, try and see if I could walk and could do stuff on my own. At this point, like, my partner, bless her, was like giving me baths and like dressing me in the morning. And, you know, we did the injections, we waited to see. And luckily, it seemed like everything was working. But it wasn't working quick enough for me to go back to work, and especially to go back to doing like a 2.5 hour car journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just turned around to that company at the time and just said, like, look, you know, my boss was a very good friend and still is a good friend. And I just said that I don't want there to be any bad blood. I just want them to carry on producing these amazing shows that they do, and I will just find a way to do my own thing. And I kind of decided at that point, like, I left that company and I took the leap at becoming freelance, even though I'm still going through recovery of my back. I mean, even fast forward to today, I'm going backwards in recovery at the moment, which is not great. But I'm still seeking and getting help and probably looking at a nerve cauterization soon, which doesn't sound great. I don't know. but during that time, I managed to, I think Christmas was about the time that I announced I was freelance. And since then, it's been overwhelming support. The post I did that actually said that I was freelance, like I did a video with it that kind of showed everything that I do, because obviously up until this point I'd done design, I'd done video, I'd done motion design, consultation, production. It was just kind of like a list went on of stuff that I have done. Whether I've done it well or not, I don't know. I leave that to other people to decide, but I've done a lot of things. So I did this video and I put it out and it got like over 3,000 views on like the first day. And it's still kind of going up from there. And it's overwhelming. I got messages and I still get messages like daily about like doing work, whether it's a logo, whether it's helping someone set up a live stream, anything. But that was crazy to think that there were people that were kind of either following me or understanding what I was going through, or even just came across my work one day and wanted to work with me. That was mental.
It kind of sounds like you've built a community around yourself without even realizing necessarily that you were doing it.
Yeah, I guess so, in a way. Like it felt like all of those people, as you mentioned before, all those people that had kind of supported me and been there and like pushed me up or put me down when I needed it, had suddenly come back with massive arms and kind of just said, hey, we believe in you, you can do this. And it was kind of that push that I needed to kind of realize like, oh, I can do this. Like we've gone through bad times in the last year, from my back injury to Charlie's surgeries to everything. And, you know, understandably, we've had money troubles because of that. Neither of us were in work for a very long period of time. And finally, this month will be the first month that we're back on track and actually paying our bills. And it's mental to think that like I did this myself with other people believing in me.
I mean, I think it's wonderful. It's obviously nobody wants to hear that someone is going through what I can only imagine is an incredibly painful medical ordeal. But at the same time, it has led you to this place where you are in control of the work that you're doing, and you have found yourself so just lovingly supported by a community that wants to see you succeed. And also, I think it's, you sort of like mentioned it in passing of telling this last section of the story, but I think it's really awesome that the person who hired you for the job that you had when you felt that pain in your back when you were driving home, like that person supported you in making the decision of leaving that position, because it was a mutual, like, you want them to be successful and their company to be successful. And they also acknowledge that you just can't make that journey anymore. And so whatever it is you have to do to be successful on your own, you should also do.
Yeah. And like, I owe him and that company so much as well. Like they didn't have to, you know, keep me on sick leave or anything like that. They didn't have to even keep me at all. Like I was still in my probationary period for the company. And every day, pretty much, they were sending me messages, not to ask when I was coming back. It was just, are you okay? Can we do anything for you? Even though I live like 2.5 hours away, it was like, can we drive down and like do anything for you? They set me up with a therapist during that time as well to make sure that I was all right. Because like, even now, like I'm still taking things like morphine pretty much daily now. They were just kind of like, they were just a lovely supporting environment, I guess. And even though I haven't seen them all now for, oh God, like coming up to a year, I guess, they still message me. Like my old boss Shed, like he messaged me a couple of days ago because my face was on a Game Blast poster at their work. But yeah, and then, you know, it's to kind of touch on what you said, like it is good but bad, I guess, bittersweet, that all of this has now come out, and like this finally this self-belief and kind of pride in what I do has come out of something bad that happened. But I guess like I've always kind of thought that nothing good happens without a reason. I guess we don't get to that final objective without going through something, whether it be hard work or hard times, I guess. And I mean, I will say as well that like during that period, because it was hard, I did kind of set up like a Twitch channel and kind of started live streaming for myself and like doing some stuff that was fun for me, and like helping my partner Charlie as well. Like we both live stream just to kind of make the days go quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become like kind of a staple of our week in a way, in that that becomes like a nice safe place that we could all, like as friends, kind of get together, watch us play stupid games and laugh about our situations and kind of just get through it that way. And we made a little community that we joke about, called the Shit Body Squad or Skelly Bob Squad, if we can't swear, I don't know.
No, that's fine.
Okay. But yeah, like we all kind of, because every one of my friends were kind of going through something at that period, whether it was stuff with me or with Charlie or other people that I know that were going through horrific medical stuff at the same time, we all kind of decided to get together and play games or watch games together at the same time every week, just so that we all had each other. And that feeling of comfort and safety kind of then became what is my freelance job today. And I now, part of one thing I do regularly is I edit live streams as kind of a full-time freelance thing that I do. So yeah.
What does that mean?
So for example, like someone that I edit videos for, like he will stream playing a game for like 4 hours. And then I take those videos every other day that he streams them, and I turn them into a 10-minute highlight. So, and I do that every other day. And that's essentially an ongoing like agreement that we have up until the point that maybe he doesn't like my work anymore. But I now have a consistent guaranteed source of work that's coming in. And because it only takes up every other day of my week, I then have the other time to kind of go and find new things or go and maybe explore different things. Like at the end of last year, I did also do last year's Minecon as well. Like they asked me back to do the creative consultancy. So, you know, fingers crossed, maybe I get to work with them again this year. But like I get to do the stuff that I love, which is this streaming, editing videos and ongoing chatting with the community that we have. But I also get to go and explore and challenge myself, like you said before. Like I get to kind of rise to different challenges as well.
Do you have goals for what you would like to try next that you maybe haven't tried yet?
Honestly, I don't know. And I think that kind of circles nicely back around to what do I want to be when I grow up? Because I still have no idea where I'm going. And I feel like I kind of like it that way, in that I've always let life kind of guide me like head on. And I don't think I'll ever kind of make a plan or make a goal, because I feel like it'll get predictable at that point.
I mean, something else that comes up a lot on this podcast is just how, because so many jobs, and working in gaming is a great example of this, so many jobs that exist today did not exist even when you were in school, right? Like some of the work that you have done since graduating from university were not things that you could have necessarily studied while you were in school.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then it's almost kind of like it would be very difficult to make a plan knowing how quickly these industries can change and evolve and grow, and new industries can develop and careers will pop up that didn't exist 15 minutes ago. And so you have to be adaptable to what is it that's going to make me happy? What is it that is going to challenge me? What is it that my skill set might be adaptable to? Those things are just as important as saying, like, I want to be a truck driver and I am going to do X, Y, and Z in order to get there.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, and it doesn't matter like what you do or what your expertise is. Even if you are a truck driver, it's always like, well, what's the better truck? Like, you know, sorry to any truck drivers, I don't know anything about trucks. But like, you know, that's exactly the point. And for me, like you said, live streaming wasn't really a thing when like I started to go into university. Like, I think Justin TV was what Twitch.tv was back in the day. But like, that wasn't a thing that I could go and learn how to do. Being like a YouTuber, for example, wasn't a thing that I could just learn. That was just a thing that I saw some people doing, and I felt like I wanted to figure out how to do that and took it upon myself to do it, I guess. And like, I feel like now there's a lot more tools out there for everyone to kind of experiment and kind of challenge yourself, because things like YouTube, Skillshare, I can't think of any others off the top of my head, but things like that exist, that if you want to go and learn something, you can just open that up and go and learn it. I spent maybe like days googling how to set up stuff like a professional microphone and a webcam and some lighting and understanding how recording software works so that I could stream myself. And even when I was in university doing a graphic design degree, I was googling how to do graphic design. You know, like, there's so many things now that are accessible to make your dreams a reality. And I feel like having dreams is important, but don't put yourself in a box. And I think that's how I've always kind of lived my life.
I mean, I kind of feel like you just said it, but just in case there's anything else that you wanted to add to that, what would be the thing you would like someone who's listening to this podcast right now to take away?
I guess like the thing that I always wanted to hear is take pride in what you do, and believe in yourself, because like, don't ever think that you're as good as what a job tells you you are. You're as good as what the friends around you tell you you are, and also what you really feel. I might have put myself down a lot, but there were some times that I thought like, oh, maybe I can do this. Stick to that first gut instinct. You can do it.
Well, I think that's a pretty good place to stop. Chloe, if you so choose, where could people find you on the internet?
Oh, so I'm kind of everywhere. I go by Ashtaric, which is Ashtaric. And that's kind of across Twitter, Twitch, whatever, really. I say that. My Twitter isn't actually that. Damn it. It's got like an X either side of it because I was an edgy emo kid.
We all were at some point. I just spent a lot of money on My Chemical Romance tickets. So we were all.
I saw. I'm very jealous.
Oh, man. I have no regrets. My bank account does, but I have no regrets. What about, like, do you have a website or someplace if people want to talk to you about working with you?
Yeah, I also have chloeashtari.com. My first name, fun fact, doesn't have a H in it because my dad can't spell.
That's really funny, because when I saw, I have only ever known one other Chloe in my life. And when I saw your name, I was like, oh, that must be the right way. Because I always thought that it was really weird for someone to be called Chloe. And that's not how you would say that at all.
Yeah, that was always my dad's argument as well. It's like, that's how I spell it. So that must be how it's written. And there's like an accent on my E, but like, I've never been able to keep that up because I can't type it on a keyboard.
If you're using a MacBook, you hold down the E and hit the number 2 for anyone out there who's interested.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Is that the way it is?
Yeah. So this is a totally irrelevant piece of information, but because I have had to work with, I've had the privilege of working with Spanish speaking clients before, I've had to learn where the proper accents for different different words and things are. And so if you hold down the letter that it kind of looks like, it'll give you a whole list of different like accents and inversions of letters and things like that. So,
oh, that's great to know. Yeah. Thank you.
No problem. That's how it is. Cause it's in this chat that we're having. I was like, I want it to be spelled correctly. So she doesn't come in and go, where's the accent on my E? This is not how you spell my name.
No, I never do that. Don't worry. I've always figured that if I can't do it on a keyboard, I'm never going to judge someone else for not doing it.
That's very understanding of you. I appreciate that. This has been a really great wow. Now I'm combining your name and the word chat. This has been a really great chat, Chloe. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about what it is you do for a living.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
As I mentioned during the opening, it was really amazing to have a conversation with someone like Chloe, who I had never met before, but was so willing to talk about the things that are really important about her health and focusing on what's really important to her about how her partner and the people who are closest to her in her life helped her to come to realizations about what her values are and where she wanted to see her career go next. If you want to talk about this episode, if you want to talk about past episodes, future episodes, just what's going on in the world right now, I'm down for any kind of conversation anytime. You can find me on Twitter at @TheLadyJSays. You can find me on Instagram at @TheLadyJSlays. So there's an extra L in there. You can email me theladyjsays@gmail.com. There's lots of ways you can find me on the internet. So just find me. I'm here. I'm ready to talk. And I'll be back next week with another episode. And until then, take good care of yourself. Bye.